This is Pittsburgh Explainer from 90.5 WESA. Every Friday, we help you understand some of the most important news stories from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, June 26th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. After more than a month of COVID-19 case counts trending downward, Allegheny County saw a spike over the last week. Since last Friday, the county has reported 199 new cases. Joining me to discuss what these numbers mean is health and science reporter Sarah Bowden. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
To what can we attribute the recent uptick in cases?
Yeah, we really don't know, but it probably has something to do with travel. More people are traveling outside of Allegheny County. Also, more people are moving around within the county. I was told by Dr. Deborah Bogan, head of the Allegheny County Health Department, during the Wednesday press conference that there aren't really any very large clusters. So most of the clusters are small, often within households. We know that household transmission is very common, but really most people don't know how they got sick. They don't know if they got sick from going to a store or there was a coworker that was asymptomatic. And while there was always community spread, this is called community spread where people don't know the source or the location of their infection. There was always community spread, but now it is increasing in Allegheny County, which indicates that the virus is circulating more widely than was the case earlier in June.
Now, have the recent protests or the primary election on June 2nd played a role in this increase?
Yeah, I was wondering that too, and Bogan was asked that question on Wednesday, but based on information gathered by case investigators and the timing of the primary and when the protests started, it doesn't appear that that's the case. Really, Bogan indicated that it's because people are traveling more, getting the virus, and then bringing it back to the county, and then, you know, also just, again, being out and about more. People are eating at restaurants for the first time in months.
So what did Dr. Bogan say? Like, is she worried? Are other public health officials worried about this uptick?
Bogan and County Chief Executive Rich Fitzgerald both say they are concerned about the increase, and they are urging people to keep wearing masks, make fewer trips out of the house. If people go to restaurants, Bogan says people should dine outside, not inside, and to wear a mask whenever they get up from their table for any reason. Also on Wednesday, UPMC had a press conference, and Dr. Donald Yeely, who has spoken at many previous UPMC press conferences, was there, and he took a very different tone from Bogan. He said it's important not just to look at new case numbers, but the level of illness among patients, and he pointed out that patients are skewing younger, which means they're generally healthier and less likely to need to be hospitalized.
That's really interesting. But I feel like the foil to that argument is, like, if they're still vectors for the disease transmission, that still puts more vulnerable populations at risk if more young people have it, even if those young people aren't going to get as sick.
That's a great point. Dr. Deborah Bogan made that point on Wednesday. It's a numbers game, even though generally young people have great survival rates when it comes to the virus. Young people have died. Children have died from COVID-19. Also, the more the virus circulates, the more likely someone who is immunocompromised or someone who's elderly will contract the virus. So it's not like we can keep everyone who is more high risk for adverse consequences sequestered. That's not the way our society is designed. Also, hospitalizations tend to lag. It takes a while for someone's condition to worsen to need to be hospitalized. So some would argue that Yeely's proclamation that patients are healthier and less in need of serious medical intervention is a bit premature.
Now, I feel like the question that's probably on everyone's mind is, what are the odds of moving back into the yellow phase if this increase in cases continue? And I'm thinking specifically about the metric that the state gave for moving us from red to yellow. And that was, for Allegheny County, we had to have less than 600 cases over the course of 2 weeks, which comes out to about 40 some cases a day. So if we're seeing multiple days with over 40 cases, I just wonder, like, are we at risk of moving backwards?
You know, a lot of people are asking that question. And I have yet to see any sort of metric or rubric for what would cause a county to move from green to yellow. And the state has continually said that the metric that you just cited, Liz, the number of cases per 100,000 people, was just one of the criteria it looked at for moving counties from yellow to green, though arguably the state has been confusing in its communication for how it evaluates which counties move from red to yellow and yellow to green. That being said, it is possible. We just don't know what the tipping point would be for us to regress back to yellow. Another criteria for counties to move from yellow to green has been its ability or the region's ability to do contact tracing and case investigation. And the county has continually said that it is able to flex up this workforce.
Sarah, thank you so much for helping us understand this topic.
Yeah, no problem. Nice talking to you.
It's time for a quick break. We'll be right back.
If you're getting a new car, don't trade it. Donate it. Rather than head to the dealer, donate that unwanted vehicle to WESA to support NPR in Pittsburgh. Your support is worth more than a low trade-in offer, and it keeps your favorite programming on the air. All of the details are at wesa.fm/cars.
Anger over entrenched racism and white supremacy in American culture is boiling over after the killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and other Black people at the hands of police and private citizens. Regular protests continue in Pittsburgh and across the country, but many activists have pivoted from simply expressing rage to making demands. Here to discuss some of the changes local activists are calling for is our city government reporter, Ariel Worthy. Ariel, thanks for being on the show this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to actually start by going back to last week. Activists presented a dozen demands for overhauling policing in the city of Pittsburgh. What are they asking for?
Yeah, they presented 12 demands. Of course, the first one was to defund the police and to put more funding into Black communities. Another was to demilitarize the police, not buy military equipment for the police department. They also asked to take police out of schools, take all police officers out of schools. They asked for other things like to cease partnerships with ICE, ban no-knock warrants. They also asked to actually fire the police union president, Robert Swartzwelder. So that was just a few of them. They definitely had a list, and they explained all of their demands and exactly they were looking for.
Now, I want to take a minute and talk about this idea of defunding the police. I think there is somewhat of a misconception out there that that means completely abolishing or disbanding police departments. But it's my understanding that that's not actually what that means, right?
I actually spoke with Brandy Fisher, who was with the Alliance for Police Accountability, and she was one of the activists who presented the demands to the city and county. And she did say that, you know, in some places when they say defund the police, they do mean disband and to give $0 to the police. But she said they were thinking about it a little differently here in Pittsburgh because they realized that it's not realistic to say that no funding goes to police. That won't exactly work out too well in Pittsburgh. But she did say that they want less money to go into the police department because its budget is currently $114 million. And to just put some of that money into community resources, especially ones that they see that Black communities need.
So how did Mayor Bill Peduto respond to these demands from this group of activists?
Yeah, he actually gave it was over 5,000 words, his response to them on Monday. And he addressed literally each demand that they had. Some of them, he explained that the city didn't have the power to change some things. Like one of the demands was to disband small police departments. That was more of a county demand, which, you know, the mayor said that the city of Pittsburgh doesn't have control over that. He also explained that, you know, the city does not have the power to fire the police union president. But he did say, you know, he is looking at ways to put more funding into community resources that the city's Black neighborhoods might need. And he did say that currently the city does not buy military equipment. So that was one that he did acknowledge. That is one demand that they're already kind of currently practicing in the city. But he did say, you know, he heard them loud and clear. He actually also acknowledged that he formed a police reform task force to kind of look at how police reform can really happen in the city of Pittsburgh right now.
Okay, now there are also some measures related to policing before city council. One of them is to hire a consultant to review use of force policies, which on its face sounds like a good idea. Why is this controversial?
So the biggest concern that several people have brought was the group itself is the densest group. And several people have said that they're worried about partnering with it because they seem to have been friendly to police in the past. So people worry that they won't be as objective as other groups could possibly be.
So what happened with that bill this week?
So there were actually two bills. The first bill was to give $25,000 to the police review board so that they could partner with someone to do this. And the second bill was to actually allow them to partner with the densest group. So the bill to give them the money was passed, but the bill to allow them to partner with the densest group, they actually did not recommend that they partner with them. And this was all, these were all preliminary votes. So the final votes actually won't happen until Tuesday.
Now, City Councilor Ricky Burgess is also seeking to expand the powers of the Citizen Police Review Board through a ballot referendum in the fall. What are those powers, and do you have a sense of, like, what are the odds of actually seeing this on the ballot in November?
The main thing is it would require officers to actually participate if there's an investigation. Currently, as Burgess explained it, if an officer doesn't want to pay attention or participate in an investigation, they don't have to. So this would actually require them to actually be part of it if there is a complaint against them. This is something that would actually go on the ballot. So even if it does pass, that does not mean it will be required immediately. Voters would still get to vote on it come November.
Of course, in a couple of weeks, there is a public hearing on several other measures related to policing that we've discussed on this show, including one that would require officers and even civilian public safety officials to intervene if they witness force being used inappropriately. I imagine you will be watching online to that public hearing, and I look forward to your reporting on that topic.
Absolutely. Yes, I will definitely be in attendance.
Thanks for being on the show this week, Ariel.
All right. Thanks for having me.
It's time for another break. Stay with us.
WESA's Good Question series answers what you've always wanted to know about Pittsburgh history and culture.
Since we have a lot of two-lane roads and narrow roads, it's a courtesy that people give so that if someone's making a left-hand turn, you let that person go.
You can revisit all of the stories in this series on our website, WESA.fm.
As we heard earlier in the show, COVID-19 infections are on the rise in Allegheny County. It's becoming increasingly clear that the pandemic is not going to end anytime soon, and social distancing is here to stay, at least in the near term. Here to talk about what that means for the region's artistic and cultural offerings is arts and culture reporter Bill O'Driscoll. Bill, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Liz.
So we're in the green phase in Allegheny County, like most of Pennsylvania. Can you remind us what's allowed to happen in terms of group gatherings, specifically when we're talking about things like live performances and also museums?
Right. So the rules in the green phase are gatherings of 250 or less. In other words, you can't have more than 250 people. But also half capacity is the rule. So I guess it's whichever of those is less, right? Like if your capacity is, normal capacity would be 400 people, you can't have 250, you could have 200. But also, social distancing is required. So, you know, the physical distancing of 6 feet or so for individuals or family groups could, of course, sit together or be together. That's about where you're at for those limitations.
So we know arts groups have been engaging with audiences virtually. Are there any interesting non-virtual workarounds that groups are now pursuing?
There's a few. So you're seeing some live music happening. Most music venues, you know, like live performance venues in general, have decided that these limitations on capacity, limiting to half capacity with social distancing, is not going to work for them. They simply can't get enough people in the door to meet their expenses under those circumstances. There's at least one music club in the Pittsburgh area that is trying to do that. You know, they're hosting local bands. I'm not sure how they're doing with it yet. I've been trying to reach them, but they've been open a couple weeks like that. It's called Jurgles. It's up in Warrendale. And there are some places doing outdoor, small outdoor sort of concert, you know, live music things. There's been a couple drive-in type things. Movie theaters are starting to open. There's plans to open more in July. as well, but that's not really a workaround. That's just opening with, you know, under the restrictions. It's really just hard for groups to do this. I did a story recently about Pittsburgh Ballet is trying to acquire a large mobile stage that would be big enough to fit a full symphony orchestra or a full opera on that they would own, but also it would be available to other sort of cultural groups in Pittsburgh, you know, like potentially the opera or the symphony, groups like that. So you could have outdoor events that way. However, they did get a big grant toward purchase of that mobile stage. They have to do some more fundraising. And then, you know, you have the question of not just audiences, but performers need to be distanced too. You couldn't pack a symphony orchestra onto a stage as you could in the before time and just have them rehearse and perform as normal. So that's going to be an issue that people are going to have to figure out how to deal with too.
In the spring, we saw events being canceled into the summer. What's the fall looking like?
Yeah, fall's starting to look a lot thinner too. Pittsburgh Cultural Trust announced that it was canceling or postponing its remaining touring Broadway shows, including Hadestown, that big Tony-winning show that was originally supposed to go in September. They postponed that whole tour. That's not going to happen until next year now. The trust is also, they run the Pittsburgh Dance Council, which normally starts its season in September. They're not going to start till January now, is what they just announced last week. They also canceled the big fall gallery crawl in the cultural district. A lot of arts groups still have their fall calendars up. The big theater companies, the symphony, the opera have not announced any changes to their fall calendar, which usually gets going mid-September to early October. However, it's hard to see at this rate, you know, how they're going to be able to do those shows.
Well, I will tell you, Bill, one thing I am very much looking forward to is Hamilton on Disney Plus coming out next month. I think that's where I'm going to get my fix of live musical theater.
Right. Yeah, sure. Well, that's one way to do it for sure. And funny enough, you know, Hamilton came to Pittsburgh in 2018. It was scheduled to return in January of this year as part of this touring Broadway series. And it's a fair question, too, if there's going to be able to do live performances of that scale in January, even, of course, right? There's arts groups around the country that are postponing their seasons into next spring. In the music industry, they're talking about, you know, maybe even next summer before people resume national and international tours. So there's just a lot of, you know, questions. And I would have to suspect we're going to see, you know, cancellations continue to roll in for the fall.
Bill, thanks for your reporting.
Sure thing, Liz. Take care.
That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Christopher Ayers is our editor. You can find all of our news coverage at our website, WESA.FM, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.